This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders, from the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The White House has a new chief of staff. An unapologetic grandmother shoots a 12-year-old boy. And the Humane Society gets a robotic kitten room.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, I give you Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, October 1st, 2010. On Tuesday, Margaret Matthews, 68, of Chicago, Illinois, decided she'd had enough of two young boys, ages 12 and 13, who she said had been harassing her in her South Shore home for more than a year. When she returned home from grocery shopping, she noticed broken windows and two boys running away. When they returned, the widowed grandmother stood on her porch and confronted them. Allegedly, they replied by hurling bricks and rocks at her. She said one hit her in the chest. "I was terrified," said Matthews, who then went inside and grabbed a gun. She called the police, but worried they might come too late, so when she went back outside, she fired at the boys, wounding the 12-year-old in the shoulder. "I was either going to be a victim or a villain," Matthews said. "I did what I had to do to protect myself." The police agreed and decided not to charge Matthews. The boys faced charges of aggravated assault. Meanwhile, in the neighborhood, troubled by violent crime, neighbors are now called, the woman they neighbors call Miss Margaret is now being called a hero. As for the boy, Hilda Brunt, who lives down the street, said, "His name? As far as I know him, I just call him the bad little boy."
Where is this at?
Chicago, Illinois.
Well, it seems like a place that is just teetering on the brink of anarchy, like, all the time anyway, so.
Yes.
I think you could do worse than to just, take out the trash occasionally.
Well, Hilda Brunt said that the bad little boy broke her window. He set her grill on fire. He started a fire last year across the street at the row houses. I had to call the fire department.
I'm sorry, I have to clarify this point. He set her grill on fire.
He set her grill on fire.
But not like her face grill.
No.
Probably like her actual barbecue grill.
Right.
Okay. Not the grill of her car.
Frenchie Johnson, a neighbor who helped replace Matthew's broken window, said Tuesday's incident was the latest of many. He said, "She talked to me on Friday and said, 'Frenchie, I've done had enough. They set the garbage can on fire, her barbecue pit. This isn't the first time they busted a window. It's bad.'"
Exactly how is it that you set a barbecue pit on fire? I think the whole point of a barbecue pit is it doesn't burn, right? That's why you're using it to cook things in.
Yes. But, you know, I don't know.
Don was distracted just now by a vuvuzela, strange as that may seem.
Yes. I have issues with the vuvuzela. It's always in the way.
While I was posing the question, Dawn was sort of not here mentally. She was instead picking up the vuvuzela and hurling it angrily to the ground to her immediate right.
It's just, we have so many knickknacks and adorable things that just keep appearing on the desk here over on my side where I work, virtually none of which are actually mine. And the vuvuzela just tends to really get in the way.
When you call them adorable, are you being ironic?
Yes.
Okay.
Although I do like our little Aboriginal boy squeaky toy that the Australian listeners sent us.
It sounds just like a real Aborigine.
It's
uncanny. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Thank you for joining us on this Friday. PDX.FM also provides this program via iTunes later on today and is a direct MP3 download here at PDX.FM or at LegionofNews.com. Still to come this hour, Science on the March and your entertainment news. You can also get this program on your mobile device if you'd like. That is mobile.pdx.fm. Mobile.pdx.fm. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Pete Rouse is the new White House chief of staff, at least on a temporary basis, while the president looks for a permanent replacement to Rahm Emanuel, who has stepped down to run for Chicago's mayor. White House press
sounds like Chicago's really a happening place to be these days, what with all the grill firing and so forth.
They need Rahm Emanuel now more than ever.
Uh-huh.
White House press secretary Robert Gibbs said Rouse certainly has the know-how.
I'm energized by the prospect of new challenges and eager to see what I can do to make our hometown even greater.
All right, so I think that is actually Rahm Emanuel himself there. Oh. So this is Robert Gibbs?
Yes. Did you play Rahm rather than White House?
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
You're supposed to play White House.
No, I'm sorry. White House won.
Pete enjoys
there we go.
The complete trust of the president. Pete has an important strategic sense that has been that he's used on Capitol Hill.
Just marking time. That's what all the press secretaries are at the White House. Just sitting there like Ari Fleischer, just waiting so they can get... Every day when you're the White House press secretary is waiting so you can drink, and every week at the White House press secretary is bringing you one day closer to retirement.
Well, you know, Rahm Emanuel's job seems great, but all I know about it is what I saw on the West Wing. You know, the chief of staff job seems awesome.
Yeah, I think the chief of staff job, I think that's one of those jobs that you want to get, but it's probably not one of those jobs you want to keep. It seems like the associated stress. I mean, not like being, mayor of Chicago or whatever is going to be any better.
No.
I mean, Chicago just seems like one of those cities that has sort of been circling the drain for a long time, and really we're just waiting for somebody to officially pull the plug and announce that we need to start over.
Well, it actually, when Anna Griffin from The Oregonian was on the Rick Emerson show yesterday afternoon, we were talking about Kitzhaber running for governor again, and she said that, you know, when he had stepped down before after serving two terms as governor, he said that the state of Oregon was essentially ungovernable.
Right.
Ungovernable. I don't even know how you say that. Governable. But anyway, I imagine that being mayor of Chicago is much the same.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Chicago's a much bigger city, and it's got the whole history of corruption and graft and racketeering.
It's really just keeping track of your graft,
I mean,
isn't it?
You really need to have a spreadsheet. I mean, it's easier now, what with technology and so forth. There's probably some sort of an Android or iPhone app just so you can keep track of what payoffs are going to arrive from who. What's going to be brought to you in a paper bag and what's going to be done in the form of political favors later on.
A little alarm that goes off when a payoff is due.
Jimmy Three Fingers Gigante is late with his protection cash this month. I mean, the good news for Rahm Emanuel is it seems like he functions well in that environment because he's sort of well known as being just a leg breaker when the time comes. That's bad news for Barack Obama. I will also say that when I saw this story the first thing this morning, the first three or four times I read it, which is before I had any caffeine, I swear to God, I thought it said that they were getting Pete Rose to be the chief of staff at the White House.
I thought that too,
which would just be awesome, because you figure that they're just trading one guy who can probably traffic in corruption pretty well for another, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm just picturing big, spongy-ass, drunk Pete Rose just sitting there, sort of slumped against a wall, looking all sad, going, you know, I said four records, they won't put me in the hall. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Well, Rahm Emanuel was given a grand White House send-off as he embarks on his run for mayor. He says he first came to know President Obama there, and I think that's the clip
what
that
cut
you
is
already
this, here?
This would be Rahm Obama.
I'm energized by the prospect of new challenges and eager to see what I can do to make our hometown even greater.
Okay.
There we go. He called it a bittersweet moment.
On the one hand, I'm excited to be heading home to Chicago, which, as you know very well, Mr. President, is the greatest city in the greatest country.
Yeah, right. Chicago.
So, there you go. So there's Rahm Emanuel. And all I really know about him before he got the gig as Obama's chief of staff is that he worked, you know, he worked with the Clinton White House, which you got to figure it. Somebody's just sort of like battle hardening you for anything that you might face in the future. So as difficult as it might be you to sort of navigate the political waters of Chicago, I got to imagine that serving under the first Clinton administration is, I mean, you know, it had to have just been shock training of the most excruciating variety.
Well, I guess Emanuel has actually wanted, that's been his dream job, to be the mayor of Chicago for a very long time. Apparently, he actually worked for Daley for a number of years at the beginning of his career before he moved up to, you know, White House stuff.
For Daley the second.
Yes.
Okay.
But he also said that he would never run against him because, you know, he supported Daley.
So, end up in a ditch.
So now that Daley's like, you know, gone, now it's kind of like, woohoo, it's my chance. So.
You know, just getting the job of being the mayor of Chicago, though, is just, it's just inheriting such a strange legacy. You know, it's not, to me, and this is just maybe my association as an outsider, because, you know, I don't think about Chicago, really, but becoming the mayor of Chicago is sort of like leading the Teamsters, you know, where it's prestigious and it's powerful and there's a lot of perks that go along with that, and I guess you do get a chance to do some good, as Elliot Ness said, but you also figure that it's like we were saying about being president the other day, where somebody kind of pulls you aside into a room and they tell you, you know, exactly what's at Area 51 and, you know, what really happened to Vince Foster. And they give you, you know, just all of the bad news, the whole laundry list of things that probably nobody else on the planet is supposed to know. And I think that in any city like Chicago, that's the way as well. Did you print some things here that
I did. I finally printed our run sheets for today.
Whirring to life.
12 minutes into the show, I printed the run sheet. I've never been to Chicago, and all I know about Chicago is what I know from movies. So in my mind, in Chicago, everybody's still like stuck in the 1930s and wearing like fedoras and riding on running boards and shooting at each other with Tommy guns.
I like to think it's exactly that way. There you go. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
The Oregon Humane Society opened a robotic playroom yesterday that allows internet users to interact with kittens waiting for adoption. The new system, which is only the second of its kind in the world, allows anyone with an internet connection to interact with the cats by logging onto oregonhumane.com/playroom. David Little, OHS spokesman, said the purpose of the kitty colony room is to help save cats' lives by letting prospective owners see them and get to know their personalities. Lyle said, "We've got three toys scattered around a room, and in real time, they will move, and cats chase them, and it's just like being in the same room with the cats."
Get to know their personalities. Cats only have one personality, which is...
Oh, that's not true.
They are just... Anything else that you might see a cat do that indicates he has a different persona, that is just a ruse. That is just... It's a front he's putting up, and he's laying in wait so he can steal your breath.
No, it's really not true, because I've grown up with cats, and my current cat is a deep disappointment to me because she's just really... The only time she ever wants me to pay any attention to her is like after the lights go off and I get into bed and I pull the covers up. It's like, boom, she lays on top of me. Well, actually, she jumps on top of me and stands there until I pet her. And then she lays down and goes to sleep. But the whole rest of the time, it's like, yeah, whatever, feed me. I'm going to poop now, whatever. I've had cats that were very affectionate and loving and snuggly. But this cat is just kind of like, yeah, I'm napping now. Where's my food? You know, we have like the love that dare not speak its name, that I can only pet her in the dark, you know, after hours.
I have no idea what you're talking about right now. What is the nature of the interaction with the cats here? So there's the three toys. I mean, but it's not like, because when you describe it, here's what it sounds like to me. And I know it isn't this, but when you're saying that there's some way that you can log onto the Intertron and engage with the cats, what I'm picturing is that I go to a website and then it's like one of those crane games at the Safeway where I just have like a big metal hand and I've got like 15 seconds to go like forward, left, no, back, no, too late. And then it tries to pick up a soccer ball or something or like,
you
know,
a
like
kitten. Up the kitten and shake it.
A beanie baby or something. Here's the thing.
The toys are probably motorized and you can make...
I would actually pay for that if they gave me like a metal crane hand that I could use just to pick up some cats and toss them around inside a room. I'd pay like $9 a month for that, like on a subscription basis. This, by the way, is a variation on something that, and I forget the name of the place, but there's some dog watching facility. I believe it is actually called Virginia Wolf. But where you can, which is, you know, and I swear to Christ, it's right down the road from a place called Muttley Crew. I don't know at what point I don't know why when we entered this sort of event horizon where everything's got to have a bad pun in the name of it if it's a place where they watch your dogs, but where you can go online and they have the dogs put into I think, four different rooms. There's two rooms that are set aside for big dogs, one for medium dogs, one for small dogs. But you can go onto their website anytime during the day. Like if you're at work and you have you and they're watching your dog, you know, while you're at the office, you can go on and you can there's a series of webcams and you can actually maneuver the webcams around so you can zoom in and watch your own dog while you're at work.
So it's like a nanny cam for a dog babysitting.
Yes, but better because it doesn't have anything to do with children or babies, Don.
Yeah.
Because it has to do with dogs.
Can you go in and look at other people's dogs?
Yeah, no, it's just they've got a bunch of cameras pointing into the room.
So it'd be like Puppy Bowl, like any time, and you can just go and watch it.
That's right. So I would when the few occasions when I would put Max or Philo there, I would just be sitting at work and I'd be typing away, but constantly be distracted. Like whenever I'd be able to get anything, I had to close it finally because I couldn't accomplish anything because I kept going. Oh, he's so cute! He's the cutest dog ever. You're much cuter than the other dogs.
Oh, look, Philo's making a friend.
You're adorable. You know, and people would come in, and then you'd realize you're talking like a retard to the computer. So this is Legion of News right here at PDX.FM.
The Broadway Bridge in central Portland will be closing to the public Friday evening due to a streetcar construction. The westbound roadway will be closed at 6 p.m., and the entire bridge will close to the general public at 8 p.m. The bridge is scheduled to reopen 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. The public is advised to use alternate routes, including the Burnside Bridge and the Morrison Bridge.
Let me understand this. The bridge is going to be closed, but we're only advised to use alternate routes. So it's really up to our discretion.
Yeah. You can just like cruise right through the barriers and into the river, apparently, if you want to.
If that tickles your fancy.
But you shouldn't, is what they're saying.
It's ill-advised.
And you should expect delays in the vicinity of the bridge.
All right. Because it's closed.
Yes, the Broadway Bridge will be closed tonight at 8 o'clock.
All right. Thanks for clarifying that.
Portland police released a sketch of a man suspected of publicly masturbating in view of middle school students earlier this week. Officers said the man followed four Hosford Middle School students Monday near Southeast 26th Avenue and Grant in his car while continuing to touch himself. Police said the same man followed another student on foot in the same area the next day. Officers have asked for the public's help in finding the man in the sketch. You can go apparently online, or I suppose we could put it on our thing, but really, he's a black guy with a mustache. He looks like he looks like every black guy with a mustache.
Says Don Taylor.
Well, those police sketches.
That's the official opinion of Legion of News, by the way. He looks like, quote, every black guy with a mustache.
Doesn't he?
I'm sure the black community appreciates your support and sensitivity.
I think I'm really saying less that all black people look alike as I'm saying that police sketches all look alike.
Let me understand that. It's not that you're not saying that. You're just saying that less.
Right.
Okay.
Because we all know.
This should be the segment that we excerpt out and send to clients. I'm going to file this away. This should be the. This will go in our demo reel.
I also believe that all Irish people are drunk.
Okay. One of our black listeners has immediately texted and says, "Really? Do I need to send in a photo? Wow." It's Legion of News right here at PDX.
Does he have a mustache?
.fm. Well, don't they all, Don?
No.
Okay, just checking.
I didn't say he looks like all black guys. I said he looks like every black guy with a mustache.
So really, it just comes into the whether you got a mustache or whether you don't have a mustache.
Right.
Okay.
Guys without mustaches come in a wide variety of shapes and sizes.
So the black male community effectively to you is like one of those Mr. Fuzzy toys you get. It's like, you know, where it's like it's got the magnetic thing and then the little, you know, and then the iron shavings you can move around to give them a facial hair in one variety or another.
Really, it's more like Superman and his glasses that if a black man has a mustache, then he just becomes unrecognizable to me.
Yes, the text continues. I'm absolutely telling all my black friends to tune in. Thank you, sir. We appreciate your support.
And Mike, the black guy in Portland who listens every day, says in the text box, "Hey, wait, there's another black guy listening to Rick Emerson?"
By the way, just for new listeners, we should probably note that when we refer to him as, quote, Mike, the black guy in Portland.
That's his self-proclaimed name. He gave himself that moniker.
Yes, that is the numbed text. Given to Mike by himself.
Yes, and every time he texts in on the text box, by the way, he signs his text, Mike, comma, black guy in Portland.
Yeah, I've been getting emails from that guy for about 12 years, and they used to say it in a huge purple font, too, which was sort of awesome. You're listening to Legion News right here at PDX. FM. Just feels like a Friday, doesn't it? Coming up later on, we have entertainment news, and the Rick Emerson Show will be on the air at 1 o'clock today. Today we have another crossover program with Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio. And because it's Friday, and this is apparently just a thing we've fallen into for reasons I can't really quantify. Fridays, especially when Sarah and Greg are on the program with us, have become this thing where we just jam ourselves full of the worst food on earth. I mean, food that often tastes really good, but you know is doing something horrible to your insides. So today, the first time around, it was potato chips of varying varieties. I guess that's redundant. The second time around, it was like Triscuits and cheese products. Yeah. Today, it's all supermarket delicatessen food. Although delicatessen is probably,
yeah,
that's probably overstating really the nature of the food that you get there. It's really, it's a deli, not a delicatessen. And I know this one sounds like an abbreviation of the other, but there's a very substantial difference.
Although I got mine at the fancy supermarket.
Uh-huh. Which supermarket was this? Was this Trader Joe's?
Hagen.
I don't even think we have one of those here. Is that in Tualatin?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we don't have your upscale options here in Portland, Don.
You know why I chose Hagen over Fred Meyer or Safeway?
I have no idea.
Because it was across the street from the place I was getting coffee.
So you wanted something that wasn't deep fried.
Because I was like going, oh, yeah, I got to, if I go to Safeway, I'll do that. And then I was driving. Literally, I never go to the Hagen, so I always forget it's there. So it just kind of jumped out at me this morning because I was on my way to Dutch Brothers to get coffee. And I went, oh, yeah, there's another supermarket. I could go right there.
Actually, and as I went to Safeway, and as I was leaving the Safeway, this is totally true. As I was leaving the Safeway parking lot this morning, I was pulling out onto on the Powell. And as I was pulling out of the parking lot, I passed Greg Nibbler, who was driving on in. And it was that thing of where you look at, you look at each other, but because you're both like half asleep, it takes you about 4 seconds to make the, and then you see each other's eyes narrow and you go, hey, and you get about half a wave in before you're passed. So he was going into the Safeway Deli as I was coming out this morning. So that's coming up later on today. The Rick Emerson Show will also have Stupid Criminal of the Week, Snuff Watch, Geek Watch, and Mr. Jack Moralia from the Portland Halloween Bazaar will be stepping on into the program with us. This is Don Taylor.
Personal income and spending have both gone up more than was expected. The downside, according to Mesero Financial Chief Economist Diane Swonk, is that most of that bump came from being caught up with their unemployment checks.
I just like to say Swonk, really, which is why we play these cuts.
That's good news because it did support some spending out there, particularly back-to-school spending. It's bad news that such an extraordinarily large share of income today is being generated by transfer payments, everything from unemployment insurance to welfare payments and Social Security checks.
All right, I'm not really listening to anything she's saying because I'm going to make this observation. Speaking of Mike, black guy in Portland, you know who Diane Swonk sounds like? She sounds exactly like Mike's co-worker, Diana from downtown.
That's good news because it did support some spending out there, particularly back-to-school spending. It's bad news that such an extraordinarily large share...
You can just sort of see her, like, wielding a katana of some kind. It's just, charging at you with a batleth.
I feel like we came into this story, like, towards the end. It just kind of, like... I don't feel like I really got the background on this before. We were just kind of going, personal income and spending have gone up. It just seems sort of... I'm not sure what the context is.
You don't feel like we really know Diane Swonk.
No.
We've just been thrust into the soundbite.
Well, apparently she works for something called Mesero Financial. She's their chief economist. And she says people are avoiding high-priced items.
That's good news because it did support some spending out there, particularly back-to-school spending. It's bad news that such an extraordinarily large share of income today is being generated by transfer payments, everything from unemployment insurance to welfare payments and Social Security checks.
Didn't she just say that?
Seriously, she just said the same thing in almost exactly the same words. This is one of those things where they have the two sound bites that are almost identical back-to-back. I think she's just saying... I can't put any kind of point on that. I have no idea what sort of information Diane Swonk is trying to convey. None.
It was a little too
zero.
Swonkian.
Yes. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. One of our fine sponsors, Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution, will... and at some point, he's going to have to come and just clean the studio. I mean, I was talking about how... I'm not going to do it during October because my wife's going to be gone anyway. And so it's like, if I had him come clean my house now... I mean, it'd be good news for him, but pointless news for me because, like, the house is almost certainly just going to turn into a big hog trough while Lara's out of town. So I would have to come, he'd have to return in November, like, regardless. But at some point in the not-too-distant future, he's going to have to come just give this place a serious once-over because...
Well, we don't vacuum.
Well,
so,
it's not just that. It's that, I mean, we have janitorial service here in this office building, but they don't ever come into this room. So I don't know whether there's sort of like an abandon all hope, vibe on here. And it's like, because we have it's not just that we have janitorial service. We actually have a janitor. I mean, mm-hmm. I've seen him. I'm here at night sometimes. And it's like the guy, he's sort of, and it's the whole thing where he kind of has the real tenuous grasp of English, but not like that much. And at one point I said to him, I said, you can actually come clean this place like whenever you like. And he just sort of looked at me and he smiled and he went, uh-huh. And then he just continued to, like, walk down the hallway with his vacuum cleaner going. And it was sort of like a he's from Barcelona kind of a moment. And I went, all right. And I just went back to typing. So the janitor guy never actually comes in here. And by the time we get off the air, the office manager downstairs is usually gone. So we've now been here for, I don't know, we've been in this room for like 3 months. And between us and the Fun Employment Radio Show, there's now just such a layer, I think, of grime on the floor and like spilled Kahlua mix. And I mean,
food crumbs.
I mean, God only knows what the floor is going to look like after we have our whole supermarket deli thing later on today. So we got to get Michael Beatty to come on in here at some point. You can contact the Cleaning Solution at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211, whether it's cleaning for your home, your business, office, residential, whether it is maintaining, carpet or marble that you got put in so it looks good forever, or whether you moved into a place and, the last folks who were there, let's say they were something like us, perhaps, and they didn't really tend to cleaning the way that they should have. You can get it back, as close to new-looking as possible. You can find it at 971-533-3211. Michael Beatty, The Cleaning Solution, a proud sponsor of Legion of News at PDX.FM. Here's Don Taylor.
A Vancouver teen was struck and killed by a train last night. It was the second death involving a teen from Mountain View High School in just the past week. In the latest accident, Officer Ilya Botvinnik said a Burlington Northern Santa Fe freight train was traveling westbound when it struck the young woman about 5 p.m. The engineer reportedly saw her in the tracks but was unable to stop the train in time. Gus Malonis, a spokesman for the railroad, said the crew saw the woman along the tracks on the south side and started emergency procedures, blowing its horn and trying to slow down, but it was too late. Investigators have not said why they believe the woman was on the tracks, but she had been listening to an iPod, and it's possible she didn't hear the train coming.
See, but that never holds any water with me, because even if you don't, like, there's a train not too far from where we are. There's a train about 200 yards from this window.
Yeah.
I don't need to hear the train to know it's going by. And it's not, headed right at me. It is, in fact, across the street and down the road. So it's a 100-ton piece of metal that's vibrating and going 75 miles an hour. That's the sort of thing you notice.
As my husband said when that deaf beauty contest winner woman was hit by a train a couple of years ago, walking on the tracks, and she was deaf, he said, that's no excuse. Have we learned nothing from Stand By Me?
Exactly. And I was to understand that if you were deaf, Dawn, your other senses come alive.
Yeah. If you're deaf, you really probably shouldn't be walking on train tracks, I think.
Yeah. I would expand it to say if you're anyone who wishes to keep
well,
living.
Yes.
All right. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Let's do our science news.
Here's science on the march. It is Friday at Legion of News. Don't forget, you can get this program on your BlackBerry, your iPhone, your Android-based device, whatever it is you might have, at mobile.pdx.fm.
If you've eaten asparagus, you've probably smelled it. But if you are one of those who can eat asparagus without later experiencing sulfur-scented pee, is it because you can't smell it or because your pee really is asparagus odor-free? A new study says either scenario could be true. The researchers also identified a single variation in the DNA code associated with a person's sensitivity to the smell of asparagus pee. Everyone has his or her own sensory world when it comes to sense of smell, said Marcia Levin-Pilchot, a neuroscientist at the nonprofit Monell Chemical Senses Center. We suspected that individual differences in ability to detect this aroma after eating asparagus might be related to genetic differences in olfactory receptors. And that is something that is being studied very intensively in order to help us better understand how the system codes for different smells.
I want to know what poor soul is responsible for detecting odors in asparagus-scented urine at the lab. I mean, that's got to be like the definition of an entry-level job.
Well, I've always found that interesting. I heard that many years ago, that it's not that not everyone gives off the odor, but that not everyone can smell it. That essentially everyone emits that odor after they eat asparagus, but some of us, our olfactory senses are set that some of us can smell it and some of us can't. But apparently they're actually considering the possibility that not everyone produces the smell and that there's actually a potential difference in metabolism that's responsible for the presence or absence of the scent. And that could also be an important genetic marker that if once they figure that out.
See, but that's a lie right there. When they say it could be an important genetic marker, that's just some guy who has a urine fetish at the lab. And when somebody says, hey, Steve, why do you spend all your time having chicks come in here and whiz into Pyrex jars so you can smell it later? He says, it could be an important marker of genetic traits to cure things. There's really no reason to be studying that. That is a guy who is indulging a pee fetish and trying to come up with a reason.
I've also been informed in the text box that, quote, everyone on PDX FM covered this yesterday, Dawn. Ha 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 ha. And they're laughing. So
thank you.
We didn't cover it yesterday, okay. So we're covering it today.
Well, we stand apart. You know, covering the news when it actually happens is for other people. That's not how...
That's right.
Don't correct us. It sickens us.
The U.S. government is expected to offer apologies to Guatemala and Hispanic U.S. residents today for intentionally infecting hundreds of people in Guatemala with gonorrhea and syphilis without their knowledge or consent than 60 years ago.
Who hasn't done that?
Apparently, the U.S. Public Health Service even encouraged the test subjects to pass the infection to others during the 1946-48 study, according to a news report by NBC. The experiments, which involved nearly 700 patients, male prisoners and female mental patients, eerily bear a resemblance to the infamous Tuskegee syphilis study. In that study, lasting from 1932 until 1972, hundreds of African-American men were told they were being treated for syphilis, but actually were getting no treatment at all. Though records of the Guatemalan study were hidden, Susan Reverby, a professor of women's studies at Wellesley, discovered them and is expected to post the records on her website today. We are not alone, apparently. As we talked about yesterday, scientists have discovered a planet with conditions that may be able to sustain water and possibly life. The Goldilocks planet, as they call it. Astronomer Derek Pitt says the planet named Gillies 581G, that's catchy, is in a nearby solar system and just 20 light years away from the Earth.
There are stars in the evening sky right now, fairly bright stars, one of which is 25 light years away, and then another one adjacent to that, that's 1,500 light years. But the most distant object visible with the human eye is about 3 million light years away.
This is one of those sound bites where we get about 2 seconds into it, and it's like the math has already outstripped my computative abilities. Hold on a second.
There are stars in the evening sky right now, fairly bright stars, one of which is 25 light years away, and then another one adjacent to that that's 1,500 light years. But the most distant object visible with the human eye is about 3 million light years away.
I'm so confused. There are stars in the sky that are 25 light years away, but the closest visible object is 3 million light years away. How does that work?
I don't know.
I'm sorry. I hate to subject everybody to this again, but I got to hear that one more time.
There are stars in the evening sky right now, fairly bright stars, one of which is 25 light years away, and then another...
All right, so let's take this a piece at a time, Don.
Okay.
There are stars in the evening sky right now, fairly bright stars, one of which is 25 light years away.
Bright star 25 years away.
And another one adjacent to that, that's 1,500 light years.
Okay.
But the most distant object visible with the human eye is about 3 million light years away.
That makes no sense.
So is he saying that there are bright stars in the sky, but those are just not visible you have to see them with a telescope or something?
I don't know.
It just seems like he's saying two different things there. And
it
I know
does.
That we are sometimes accused of not being terribly bright in matters of science and technology. But that's one of those things where I'm honestly making like a good faith effort to understand what's going on in this soundbite. And there's just no explanation coming to mind. This is just, I can't make heads or tails of it. Okay.
Well, he also says where there's liquid water, there could be some form of life.
You know, the front side of the planet is hot, the back side of the planet is cold, but right around that middle could be liquid water.
So all somebody right. keeps replacing it. Most distant, most distant, most distant. The farthest one you can possibly see. I don't know. Okay, apparently you and I are just stupid and we don't understand this because people are telling me that it's really obvious.
Okay, well.
Okay. Also, on a note that I just personally find hilarious, the person who had said that, you know, they'd covered the pee story yesterday and then was going, ha, 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 ha. After I mentioned that, they came into the text box and said, wow, this thing works? Yes. Eek.
Yes, it really
does. Sorry.
Yes, when you type something on the internet, people can actually see it, sir or madam. That when you type something into a chat box, you are in fact conveying your thoughts and opinions to those folks on the other end. And by those folks, I mean Dawn and myself. Just, you know, FYI. Are we still in science news here?
Let's close out the science.
All right, there you go. There's your science on the march for Friday, right here at Legion of News. There you go. You are listening to Legion of News right here, PDX.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is coming up at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. Got a Geek Watch, Snuff Watch on the way later on, Stupid Criminal of the Week, and Greg and Sarah from Fun Employment Radio will be in the studio with us. Here's Don Taylor.
The Senate unanimously passed a bill on Wednesday that stipulates that commercials must remain at the same level of volume as the TV show they accompany. Unsurprisingly, the Federal Communication Commission has been receiving complaints about blaring commercials for pretty much as long as television has been around. But since commercials and programs come from a variety of different sources, the FCC long ago concluded that regulating the volume was too difficult a task.
Yes, because God knows that there's no technology available to broadcasters of radio or television programs that lets them modulate the volume at which something... All right, fine, whatever.
But an industry organization recently organized guidelines on how to transmit audio in a consistent way, though broadcasters may have to purchase new equipment. Seizing the opportunity to save their hearing, the Senate passed legislation that requires that these guidelines be adopted as rules by the FCC. The bill's title is the Commercial Advertisement Loudness Mitigation Act.
So this just means that when they go to a break, that the volume can't be like, you know, twice as loud for the commercial than it is as it is for the television program.
Right.
First of all, I wonder whether people actually still watched television commercials. Secondly, I mean, it's a lie when broadcasters say that they don't have the ability to do that because they've had the ability to do that in every broadcast medium for like 50 years. But thirdly, it's just more governmental meddling, Don Taylor. That's what that is.
And also, really, they didn't have anything more important to deal with yesterday?
Well, and I mean, if you know, if NBC or whoever just chooses to inflict a loud, annoying commercial on their viewers, and the viewers seem fine with it. I mean, it seems like there's really only two outcomes there. Either the viewers are fine with it and they don't mind, or the viewers just change the channel. Seems like that's a problem that works itself out in either event.
It's a good thing we've resolved all of our problems with, you know, healthcare and the economy and minimum wage and all of that stuff. That now, obviously, their plates are clean and they have nothing better to do, and they can address these other issues like how loud TV commercials are.
The government working for you, Don.
I think it's a sign that things are obviously going very well.
The best part is how you actually punctuated that with a facial expression just now that was clear.
Just like for you.
It was you just did a facial expression that was, it was like you were meaning to turn to camera three and then give a little red buttons look to the folks at home. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.fm, an audio broadcast completely without a visual component. The Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock. We'll be joined by Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler. See, now you're just doing it to screw with me. Brought to you by Castalia Language Center. They are based in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Castalia Language Center, they offer Spanish language classes for adults. So whether you are just sort of wading into learning a second language or a third language, as the case may be, whether you're an intermediate Spanish speaker or if you have some sort of advanced Spanish knowledge but you just want to, you know, you brush up on it before you travel, before you move, before you whatever, or if you just like keeping your brain in shape by learning things. And languages are, you know, one of the best things you can put into your brain in order to forestall the onset of memory loss as you get older and all kinds of things. So you find out more at portlandspanish.com. That is all one word, portlandspanish.com. Clara Grebel, who is the owner and operator of Castalia Language Center, is a native Spanish speaker from Argentina, and they offer classes at all kinds of different times, many different days, so they can find something that works with your schedule, and you're going to be in the class with other adults and no more than seven other people. So class sizes are limited to eight adults. It means you get near individual attention, and you're all learning at the same rate and in the same way. Castalia Language Center is a proud sponsor of Legion of News here at PDX.fm. Find out more at portlandspanish.com. Here's Don Taylor.
For the first time in more than a decade, the federal government is funding sex education programs that aren't based solely on abstinence. But they're not just about handing out condoms either. Beginning this school year, a five-year, $375 million grant is being divided among 28 programs that have been proven to lower the pregnancy rate among participants, no matter their focus. Many programs distribute condoms, but about half also aim to boost teens' academics, get them involved in extracurricular activities, and even improve their parents' job skills. status. Advocates believe this above-the-waist approach gives kids the tools to help them succeed in school and make better life decisions, especially about sex. Bill Alpert, the chief program officer for the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy, says there's a growing realization that we have to talk to young people about relationships. It's not just body parts. It's saying, what are your goals, and helping young people understand what they need to do to get there. The theory, which has become popular in the safe sex community in the past decade, will replace the abstinence-centered talks funded by the Republican Congress in the late 1990s and later under President George W. Bush to the tune of $1.5 billion. Abstinent programs will still receive a $50 million annual federal grant that requires states to match three for every $4, and about 30 states have applied for that money. The $375 million HHS grant does not require states to provide matching funds.
I just, you know, I always want to say pedestrian, and then I want to say prosaic, and then sometimes I want to say pedantic. Because when I wake up in the morning, my mental thesaurus and my mental dictionary are not quite settled into place. And so occasionally I will open my mouth and all three of those words want to come out at the same time. And neither of them, none of them is actually correct. But just on a real basic level, I don't understand how you spend. I mean, it's almost admirable that you can spend 50, what is it, 50 million or 50 billion? Was it a B or an M there?
Well, the total is going to be $375 million.
But how much was set aside for abstinence?
Originally, the abstinence programs will receive a $50 million federal grant.
So the idea that you could actually spend $50 million on the abstinence program, I mean, it's like you've almost got to give it up for some sort of perverse money-spending genius. I mean, that is sort of
It was $1.5 billion under the Republicans.
But that's like the sex ed equivalent of the $5,000 hammer or whatever that the Defense Department comes up with. Because really, how many steps are there to teaching abstinence? Just about, no, put it away, mustn't, no, bad. I mean, and then, or just jamming a cork into it. I mean, really, that's it. I mean, what else really is there to discuss in terms of,
once you've written just no on the blackboard,
I'm not even passing any sort of moral or ethical judgment. I just don't understand how you spend $50 million to say, like, stop it. No.
Abstinence education on top of everything else just doesn't really work, as shown by the vast number of kids who seem to believe that having anal sex is okay. Like, that's not the same thing.
Well, that goes without saying. See, like, that to me is not even,
that counts as abstinence.
Like, to me, that's not even the observation, because, okay, of course, it's like, it's a given that that doesn't work. My whole thing is, where is $50 million going? Like, what is it that they're spending that on? You got to figure that somebody is just having one hell of a cocktail party somewhere and, and just laughing it up at the rest of us. So, all right. So there you go. So there's that. You know, the sex education of this country could be so much easier if they just put, like, you or me, you know, or anybody who has, like, actual, you know, like real world experience with how people behave in charge of it. Where you just have two classes, and you could have it either like a mixed gender class, or you could separate the boys from the girls. I don't know how they do it in school now. Where you just tell all the girls, like, look, here's the thing: men are pigs, and will tell you absolutely anything they think will get your pants off. It doesn't matter what it is. They will tell you that having sex with them will actually put out fires and save kittens and cure cancer. It doesn't matter. They'll tell you anything that will get you into bed, and then they just tell men, look, if you have sex without a rubber, you're going to end up married to someone who looks like her mother in about 10 years, and you're going to lose $200,000 in the bargain, and also you will never achieve anything.
And you're going to work at shucks.
Yeah.
And you're not going to, like, have any sort of a life that you're enjoying ever.
Spend the rest of your life in a paper hat serving orange soda to teenagers. Yeah. So, all right. But they don't ask us, do they, Don?
No, they don't.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
A man doing chores on Sunday discovered a 9-foot-long alligator in the backyard of his Merritt Island, Florida home. Tim Johnson said he heard a noise and spotted the gator in his yard. Johnson said, "I was weed-eating the backyard, and I bend down, and I heard this whap, and I saw this light that was moved, and I looked over, and I see this huge tail."
You know, he speaks in like three different tenses there, just in the first sentence or two.
Johnson said he yelled for everyone in the yard to get inside and call 911. A crowd later surrounded the trapper, who was called to capture the beast. Johnson said, "It's the closest he's ever been to an alligator." He said he wanted to make sure that the gator was nabbed so it wouldn't end up in someone else's yard.
Oh, there you go.
How nice of him. Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday. This is Legion of News at KDX.fm.
The Hills couple, Heidi Montag and Spencer Pratt, have called off their divorce, reports TMZ. Montag filed for divorce in July, but she was recently seen with Pratt in Costa Rica. She filed a motion for dismissal at L.A. County Superior Court on Wednesday. Two and a Half Men star Charlie Sheen walked his daughter Cassandra Estevez down the aisle as she married childhood sweetheart Casey Huffman at Santa Barbara's Bacara Resort and Spa on September 25th. Sheen walked his 25-year-old daughter down the aisle to the song Flightless Bird from Iron and Wine.
Okay.
After a long-time working relationship with Victoria's Secret, Project Runway host Heidi Klum is moving on. All good things have to end, said Klum in a statement. I will always love Victoria and never tell her secret. She actually said that. Out loud. I'm sorry.
I'm just waiting for you to regain your equilibrium. It's okay.
Okay. Actress Jamie Lee Curtis released the following statement regarding the passing of her father, legendary actor Tony Curtis. My father leaves behind a legacy of great performances in movies and in his paintings and assemblages. He leaves behind children and their families who loved him and respected him, and a wife and in-laws who were devoted to him. He also leaves behind fans all over the world.
In his paintings and assemblages.
I knew he painted. I didn't know he did assemblages.
It sounds like some sort of a catalog that you would, you know, get from Sears Roebuck in 1907 or something. You know, the Sears Roebuck catalog, a series of purchasings and assemblages from a concern located in the metropolis of Chicago.
Perhaps he did decoupage.
That's entirely possible.
Tony Curtis, who died of cardiac arrest Wednesday at his Las Vegas residence, was 85. Film credits for Curtis include Sweet Smell of Success, The Defiant Ones, Spartacus, Some Like It Hot, and The Boston Strangler. Actors Annette Bening and Robert Duvall will be honored at the Hollywood Awards Gala in Beverly Hills, California. Bening will receive the Hollywood Actress Award, and Duvall will grab the Hollywood Actor Award at the ceremony, which takes place at the Beverly Hilton Hotel October 25th. I have no idea who puts those on or what they're about. I never heard of those awards before.
Let me ask you this about Annette Bening. Where did she come from? By which I mean, was there some role in particular that made her? Because when I go
yes,
back and
the role of the woman who was sleeping with Warren Beatty.
But I mean, really, it's not like that's an exclusive list or anything. But really, by that rationale, there ought to be 4,000 women showing up tomorrow or wherever with Robert Duvall for the award. When I look at my sort of mental file and I think back on Annette Bening, maybe it's because we were talking about this the other day. I come up with the American president, and then before that, I've got American Beauty, maybe. Well, I guess American Beauty was after that. I got nothing else, though. The index card for her is just blank beyond that.
Really, the thing that brought her to everyone's attention was Bugsy. When she met Warren Beatty. I can't remember what she had done before that, but it wasn't a lot that people had heard of. And then Beatty took a meeting with her to talk about casting.
Took a meeting with her.
Well.
With real meat.
The way it goes, he met her for like lunch, I think it was, to talk to her about, being in Bugsy, and immediately was smitten. And then she started sleeping with him, and it became a big deal that she was in Bugsy and sleeping with Warren Beatty, and that pretty much made her career.
You know, you talk about Warren Beatty, everything just takes on a sexual connotation. He took a meeting with her. He had a lunch to talk about being in Bugsy, if you know what I mean.
Being in Bugsy is like the best.
I don't even know
what that would be.
I don't even know what I'm trying to convey with that. It just sounds perverse.
I plan to spend a lot of this weekend, though, being in Bugsy.
You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Entertainment news continues in just one moment. We want to welcome a brand new business partner to Legion of News. That is Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at SquiresElectric.com. They've been in Portland for 12 years. Joe Squires, of course, was born here, grew up in Washougal, and then spent later years in his life. And we're going to have no doubt, we're going to get him in the studio because I want to ask him about this whole business of working on a nuclear submarine. And he's got a photo of it on his wall. That's the other thing I noticed. He's got it right above the desk. And it's one of those things, I'm not saying he does it for this purpose, but I mean, you know, I think it was the Georgia, maybe is the name of the sub. So if you're sitting and looking at him, it's up and to the right, I guess. And it's positioned in such a way. And again, I'm not saying it's intentional, but you have to ask about it at some point. I mean, he's just got it up there because, you know, it's a place where he spent a lot of time, and he's proud of his service, and so he's got it on the wall. But eventually, when you're talking to him, you find yourself just staring at this picture of a submarine, which seems to be there, like, for no reason. You have to go, what's up with the submarine photo? And then he just says real casually, in that way that really smart, accomplished guys always do, I was an electrical engineer on a nuclear submarine. But anyway, and then he just sort of, you know, goes on with the conversation, and then you find yourself repeatedly returning to it because, you know, because it's a thing just like so beyond my own abilities. Anyway, the website for Squires Electric is squireselectric.com, and we're going to have...
If you have a submarine and you need some electrical work done on it...
If you have a steam leak and you only have a belt and a mattress and you need a guy who can actually fix it with that, he apparently can do this. In the meantime, his contact information is as follows. Squires Electric can be contacted at squireselectric.com or at 503-252-1609 for any kind of electrical wiring, any kind of Ethernet wiring, any kind of wiring you might have that needs to be replaced or maintained, fixed or updated in your home or your office, any part of your house, actually. They can take care of that and make sure that it's done safely, make sure that it's done correctly, make sure that it's done right the first time. 503-252-1609. Free estimates, no job too small or too large. Everything from a single light socket to a massive condominium with many hundreds of rooms they have done. SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. This is Dawn Taylor.
Well, our new Tonight on Television segment, which I would like to dedicate today to my friend Michelle Morris, who is homesick from work listening to this today. And I told her I'd mention her because I could do that.
And because she's easily amused?
Yeah, and you know, it makes me look powerful. I can mention you on the radio. Anyway, new on TV tonight, there is a new episode of Supernatural, new episode of Medium, and might be a new episode on TLC of a show called Four Weddings. Tonight it's Four Weddings and a Pickup Truck, in which one bride plans a reception featuring barbecue from a local eatery, while another coordinates an elaborate sit-down meal festooned with sparkling decor. Also on the Food Network, the show Meat and Potatoes, a search for the best barbecue spots leads Rom to Austin, where he indulges in fancy brisket at Lambert's Downtown Barbecue.
What is the name of the show?
Meat and Potatoes.
So that's not the title of an episode. That's the actual name of a program.
No, the episode is called Barbecue Madness. The show is called Meat and Potatoes.
All right.
On Real Time with Bill Maher tonight, actor-comedian David Cross and journalist Joe Klein are the interview guests. The panelists are commentator Arianna Huffington, reporter Nora O'Donnell, and scholar Cornel West.
See, I wish with that show that I could sort of take it a la carte, that I could pick and choose. You know, in the future, you know, we have this thing with the FCC mandating now that commercial volume has to be the same, you know, the level of audio has to be the same in commercials as the rest of the show. I want to have some futuristic television that lets me just mute certain guests on a panel show so that I can just listen, like, let's say, to David Cross or Joe Klein and then not have to hear, like, Michelle Malkin when she's on there screeching about something.
So, also, there's a new episode of Smallville on tonight, which...
That show is still on the air?
I know. It's been on for, like 15 years. I have no idea.
Jesus.
Clark Kent has got to be, like, 35 now. I have no idea what's going on in the show. My husband will watch it occasionally, and it's one of the things that I will wander into the room and look at the TV and realize I have no idea what's actually going on.
What is that guy's name? Tom Wells? Tom Wellington? Something like that.
Yeah, Tom Welling.
Welling, the guy who plays...
Who I believe is actually an executive producer on Hellcats.
But, I mean, he's got to be like 40 by now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just been on forever.
Because according to this, tonight's episode, Cat Grant is hired by the Daily Planet to replace Lois, who has left for Egypt. When Clark saves Kat from an assassin named Deadshot, played by Bradley Stryker, by the way, who was Lieutenant Ty on Battlestar Galactica.
Wait a minute. So this is no longer taking place in Smallville, actually. We are now in Metropolis.
Yes, apparently so.
Unless this is like the... unless this is the Smallville Bureau...
They must be in Metropolis, because...
Okay. All right.
So anyway, he saves her from Deadshot. He uncovers a plot against the Blur. Meanwhile, Lois finds herself under Carter Hall's protection in Egypt. I have no idea what any of that means.
No, I'm completely lost.
I don't know what's going on. And why is Lois Lane going to Egypt?
I have no idea.
I'm confused.
But if you'd like to watch that is it's apparently on tonight.
And it's on what channel, Rick?
That's on the CW. That's Northwest 32, CW Cable Channel 3, the home of Gossip Girl and Rick Emerson's Outlook Portland.
Yes.
Thank you, Dawn Taylor.
You're welcome.
And Hellcats, by the way, which I watched. I actually watched part of Hellcats the last episode or something. And the thing is, it's actually...
I know.
It's actually not that bad.
I started watching it this week.
It's kind of great, actually.
I actually like it. It's my new Gossip Girl. It's okay. My new trashy
and here's
TV
the thing.
Show.
It's not like we compared notes before we came on the air today, so I didn't know that you were watching it, and you didn't know that I was watching it. That's a thing we have just now jointly revealed, that I was... And you know, because it's a bit of a mixed bag with any television television show. You just, you know, 50-50 whether it's going to be good or dreck. And it actually falls into the good category, but you're right, it's a very specific... You know what it is? It is good in the same way that the deli food from the supermarket that we're going to be having later on, which is just a whole series of... Which is basically just pieces of deep-fried tire. You know, it's the same way that that's going to be good. So, fantastic.
Yeah. But it is. It is this... Hellcats has this smoking hot girl who is, like, kind of rough around the edges.
Not like the others.
And doesn't want to actually be... A cheerleader, but she has to do it to stay in school to become a lawyer. And she used to be a gymnast, so she's rocking. And I don't know. And Gail O'Grady is her white trash mom.
Yeah, it's like Drumline with boobs, basically.
Yeah, it
is
really
what that
is.
So awesome. There you go. There's your entertainment news for Friday, right here at Legion of News. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock today with your Geek Watch, Snuff Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week. We'll talk with Mr. Jack Moralia, who is running the Portland Halloween Bazaar this year. We have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's Pop Culture Authority answers the question, why did there need to be an actor inside R2-D2? That is today's Pop Culture Authority. Why did there need to be an actor inside R2-D2. Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler of Fun Employment Radio will pay a visit to the show around 2:30 today. I have another crossover episode with those guys. And today's food theme is supermarket deli food. If you're a subscriber to the Rick Emerson Show, that comes up 1 o'clock. If not, you can do so at rickemerson.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail at the following number, 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964, and let us know in 2 minutes or less exactly why it is you or somebody you know should receive a 1 month subscription to the Rick Emerson Show. We give away 10 of those every month as part of the Emerson Grant Program, along with our partners at New Millennium Landscaping and Maintenance. Here is Dawn Taylor.
A new suspected drug tunnel was found by Border Patrol agents along the border in Nogales, Arizona. It measures 2 feet by 2 feet and runs 50 feet into Mexico. Assistant Port Director Greg Hope said, tighter enforcement at the border is forcing alleged criminals to go underground.
I believe our enforcement efforts above the ground, at the port of entry and away from the port of entry, it's causing more and more of this type of activity.
Hope says it's not only the illicit activity that makes this tunnel dangerous, it also weakens the infrastructure.
Pretty unsafe to be down in a tunnel like that. We have concerns for the infrastructure. It could compromise the structure of the facility.
So when you say a drug tunnel, I don't want to overthink this. This is really just a tunnel they've dug underground so that they can bring drugs in.
Right.
How long does it take to do that? Because I was watching the last 20 minutes or something of Shawshank Redemption. Working out, it takes like Andy Dufresne 20 years or something. Now, granted, he's like digging it out with a spoon, basically, and he's only able to dump out sections of a cell when he's walking around in the front yard.
And he can only do it, you know, at night.
Yeah, and he only do it at night. It takes him 20 years. But on the other hand, you got to figure if you're digging a drug tunnel, I mean, there's, you know, the man is around at some point, or there's cops or border guards or whatever it is. So I wonder exactly how you keep the thing from just collapsing inward.
Well, you would have to put up some kind of wooden support along, like in a mine. You would have to occasionally have some beams and such.
I mean, it's kind of impressive in a strange way when you really think about it. I mean, it's not a thing that I could do. I would almost assuredly die doing something like that. But really, one cannot discount the motivational aspect of not only drugs themselves, but of the drug trade. I mean, if you think about the number of accomplishments in this world that wouldn't have, that it would never have been completed if the person hadn't either been on drugs or trying to sell drugs. I mean, we wouldn't have like half the stuff we have now.
Of course, it says it runs 50 feet into Mexico. So I wonder, does it just like go right underneath like a fence on one side and then, I don't know.
Is this just like a Warner Brothers cartoon where it's like tunneling under Sam the sheepdog? Like it's just enough to sort of go around him? All right. There you go. Well, let's bring the curtain down on this. Another exciting episode of Legion of News. Don't forget, Legion of News comes your way each and every weekday at noon right here from the studios of the Emerson News Network via PDX.fm. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Egler, and our chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show comes your way next at rickemerson.com. We will see you Monday at noon for another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.